We are in Job chapter 31. Job is expressing his frustration about his situation, his turn from prosperity and prestige to being mistreated and abused, or just simply ignored in his situation of loss of family, loss of business, loss of health. And in the midst of all of this, he is frustrated, I think, most of all, by the fact that he's been a good guy. He's been a genuinely righteous individual. So why in the world would God be doing this to him? Now remember, he functions under this false assumption that the bad things happening to him are being done by God. He doesn't know anything about chapters 1 and 2 that we do, that it's actually Satan doing these things. Yes, it is being done with God's permission, but only because God is well aware that Job can handle it. Remember the 1 Corinthians 10:13 memory verse that I've given you all? No time of testing has come upon you except that which is common to all mankind. And God is faithful in that he will not allow you to be tested beyond what you are able. And with that time of testing, he will provide a way of escape that you may be able to endure it. 1 Corinthians 10:13. If you haven't memorized it, get it done. And the next time you come into a time of trouble, time of testing, say it to yourself over and over and over again. Because that's God's promise that he never allows any of us to be put into a lose-lose situation. That is imperative to understand in this situation here. While God is permitting Job to be treated in this way by Satan, God knows that Job can handle it, and God is correct. And so Job here is not aware of all the background information. He just knows he's in the middle of hard times after being a good guy, and he doesn't understand that. Chapter 31, he expresses some of that frustration. I have made a covenant with my eyes. How then can I gaze at a virgin? And he's talking here about, I have made vows, I have made commitments that I am not going to look lustfully on another woman, on some other woman than my wife. My sexual thinking is going to be focused on her, not on somebody else. So I've made this covenant with my eyes. How then can I gaze at a virgin? What would be my portion from God above and my heritage from the Almighty on high? So if I violated my commitment to my wife by, as Jesus will later describe, committing adultery in my head with my eyes, if I did that, I'd kind of deserve God taking me down. Is not calamity for the unrighteous and disaster for the workers of iniquity? So all of these guys in this book have been functioning under the belief that for the most part, bad things happen to bad people. Now his buddies seem to believe bad things only happen to bad people. That's a false assumption. But Job is definitely in that same camp of thinking that bad things typically happen to bad people. So why is it happening to him, a good person? Verse 4, does not he, meaning God, see my ways, number all my steps? You see, doesn't God know that I don't look lustfully on other women? Verse 5, if I have walked with falsehood and my foot has hastened to deceit, so if I have actually done things that are wrong, like lied, if I have gone out there intending to deceive people. Well, then let me be weighed in a just balance and let God know my integrity. So he throws this in. God already knows that I'm not that way. But, verse 7, if my step has turned aside from the way, and my heart has gone after my eyes, and if any spot has stuck to my hands. Now, that's a little bit of a weird phrase that needs explanation. He's talking about taking bribes or stealing things, something along that nature, that things are in his hand that don't belong in his hand. They don't belong to him. So if any of those things, verse 8, then let me sow and another eat, and let what grows for me be rooted out. Then let me not have a good harvest. Punish me, God, for that sort of misbehavior. Verse number 9. If my heart has been enticed toward a woman, or if I've lain in wait at my neighbor's door, so whether I've got some sort of premeditated sexual sin or premeditated sin of assault or bodily harm or even murder. So if I've really been engaged in that sort of stuff, then may I justly suffer for that. And he mentions how things happening to him are going to reverberate into effects upon his family members. So he says here, verse 10, then let my wife grind for another, meaning let her have to be a servant instead of somebody that hires servants. Let others bow down on her. Now that's, wow, that's a really rough one right there. It's the idea that may she end up belonging to another man. So basically, if I've been a bad guy, then let me be taken out of the equation and my wife be intimate with some other guy. But then he comes back to why he wouldn't do any of these things. For that would be a heinous crime. That would be an iniquity to be punished by the judges. You know, to lie, to steal, to assault, to take bribes, to be involved in adultery. Those would be bad things, and they would deserve judgment, human judgment in most of these cases. Verse 12, for that would be a fire that consumes as far as Abaddon, and it would burn to the root of all my increase. Now, Abaddon is the section of Sheol that is set aside for the worst offenders. It is the place where the fallen angels of Genesis 6 have been sent, according to both 2 Peter and the book of Jude. So if he, Job, has engaged in sinful behavior, then he would deserve to be in the fires of Abaddon. If I have rejected the cause of my manservant or my maidservant when they brought a complaint against me, what then shall I do when God rises up? So if I haven't responded appropriately to accusations that I cheated my own servants, then what hope is there for me when God gets involved in the picture? Because God will judge the unrighteous eventually. When he makes inquiry, what shall I answer him? You know, when he starts his investigation, how am I going to be able to avoid confessing? Did not he who made me in the womb make him? Did not one fashion us in the womb? And so this goes back to verse 13, the idea that if he's cheated his employees, then he kind of deserves to come under the judgment of God. Because he and they are equal. Just because he has more money or more prominence or more power doesn't mean that he gets away with stuff. God made them both, and God will judge them both on God's standard. Verse 16, if I have withheld anything that the poor desired, or have caused the eyes of the widow to fail, or have eaten my morsel alone, meaning just not shared anything, and the fatherless has not eaten of it. And these are all things that he is not engaged in. This is a what-if sort of proposition. Verse 18, for from my youth the fatherless grew up with me as with the father, and from my mother's womb I guided the widows. So he can't hardly stand it. He's giving these what-ifs, but he has to keep going, but that's not the case. Because the truth is, I grew up showing respect for the orphans and the widows and trying to help them out. Verse 19, if I have seen anyone perish from lack of clothing or the needy without covering. Now immediately, this section here makes me think of Jesus telling the parable of the sheep and the goats there in Matthew 25 about how when the king comes in his kingdom, you know, there's going to be these people that are welcomed in, that are unexpected to be welcomed in. And those that will be shut out of the kingdom unexpectedly, and all of it's going to be based on what they did for the least, the disenfranchised, the powerless in society. Did they feed the hungry and clothe the needy and help those that were sick and those that had been wrongfully imprisoned? And so Job's kind of striking on those same sorts of topics here of social justice. That is, we live in a society, and we ought to participate in keeping that society fair for everyone. So if I've seen anyone perish from lack of clothing or the needy without covering, if his body has not blessed me, if he's not warmed with the fleece of my sheep, now his body blessing me means that I've helped them out. So if that's not been the case, where I've helped them out by giving them what they need so that they thank me for it, if I've raised my hand against the fatherless, being mean toward them, because I saw my help in the gate and then let my shoulder, and then he comes with his own curse here, then let my shoulder blade fall from my shoulder, let my arm be broken from its socket. For I was in terror of calamity from God, and I could not have faced his majesty. So if I didn't help people out, may God do so and even more to me. All the bad things that could possibly happen, because I would deserve it. If I have made gold my trust, talking about greediness here, or called fine gold my confidence, if I've rejoiced because my wealth was abundant or because my hand had found much, if I had looked at the sun when it shone or the moon moving in splendor and my heart had been secretly enticed and my mouth has kissed my hand. Now, that needs a little bit of explanation there. He'd been talking about wealth first. So if I had tons of wealth and didn't use it to help other people out, then I kind of deserve to come under the judgment of God. Then he says, if I look up at the sun and the moon and I worshiped them. When he talks about my mouth kissing my hand, think about the genuflecting that you'll see some Catholics and Orthodox do when they come into the church sanctuary, I think they call it, but whatever, where the crucifix is, and they'll, you know, do the head, chest, and then the two shoulders, and then at the end of that making of the cross, they will kiss their fingers, kiss their hand. That's what he's talking about here, is something like that. That if Job had looked up in the sky to the sun and moon and treated them like worship objects, like gods and goddesses, and kissed his hand in honor of them, then he deserves to be in trouble, for I would have been false to God above. If I have rejoiced at the ruin of him who hated me and exalted when evil overtook him. Now, this needs to grab us today, because I have seen and I've participated in the past. I've repented of this, and I'm trying to stay repentant in this. If we rejoice when bad things happen to other people, that's not good. We should have more empathy than that. We should feel sorry that they hadn't repented, that their misbehavior got them in trouble. So Job kind of includes that in his catalog here of what would be bad. If I have rejoiced at the ruin of him who hated me or exalted when evil overtook him, I have not let my mouth sin by asking for his life with a curse. So Job says, understand what I'm saying here is just an expression of what if. It didn't really happen because I don't even let my mouth curse other people. If the men of my tent have not said, who is there that he has not been filled with his meat, meaning who hasn't he helped? Well, verse 32, the sojourner has not lodged in the street. I've opened my doors to the strangers, the travelers. So Job has always been very hospitable, a lover of strangers. Somebody that when they meet someone or see someone that they don't know or who have clearly come from somewhere else, their first response is not, who are they and how can we get rid of them? Their first response is, who are they? I wonder if they need some help. That's a much better reaction. And that's another thing in our society that needs to be addressed. Christians need to quit being xenophobic, that's fear of other people, and more xenophileo, that is, lovers of these strangers, wanting to know, I wonder if we can help them out. Okay, verse number 33. If I have concealed my transgressions as others do by hiding my iniquity in my bosom, because I stood in great fear of the multitude and the contempt of families terrified me, so that I kept silence and did not go out of doors. So here is failure to act. So I knew there was something that needed to happen, but I didn't do it. Oh, that I had one to hear me. You know, so if only someone could hear me make my pleading here that I haven't done anything wrong. Here is my signature. Let the Almighty answer me. Now, we've heard a couple of different times here that Job wishes that he could file a lawsuit with God. Not that he wants to sue God, but he wants to be in some sort of forum of, you know, back and forth to understand what's going on and why, and to present his case. So he says, here's my signature. Let God, you know, respond to my request. Oh, that I had the indictment written by my adversary. in this case, he says, I wish that I could take the accusation, the written accusation that some of these people are making against me. Verse 36, surely I would carry it on my shoulder. I would bind it on me as a crown. I would give him an account of all my steps. Like a prince, I would approach him. So he says, if they just have a written indictment against me, I'd take that before God and talk about it. If my land has cried out against me and its furrows have wept together, if I have eaten its yield without payment and made its owners breathe their last. So Job is wealthy enough that he has tenant farmers working for him. They're the ones that are putting in the seed and taking care of the fields and harvesting the crops. And Job, because he owns the property, because he is the one that provided the seed and is paying these people, he gets a cut of the harvest. Well, here he's basically saying, if I've cheated in that tenant-farmer agreement, then verse number 40, let thorns grow instead of wheat and foul weeds instead of barley. So if I have misappropriated the labor of others and abused them as my employees, then may my whole agricultural business fall apart. Now, he doesn't have any agricultural business left right now. So he is speaking in the past tense, I suppose, of this. And then we come to this. The words of Job are ended. So Job is finished in his response to his three friends, so-called. And each of them have responded to him twice. And so there's been this back and forth that we've been watching very closely over the last multiple sessions. And so now Job is done with that. Job will now be talking to God in the latter part of the book. But before we get to that most important part of the book place where God is doing the talking, we have another character that gets introduced. Chapter 32. So these three men ceased to answer Job because he was righteous in his own eyes. So Job won't confess because Job is confident he has nothing to confess. And so the three guys get frustrated and they just give up. They quit. They don't have anything else to say to him. And so Elihu, the son of Barakil, the Buzite of the family of Ram, burned with anger. Now, this guy is a younger guy. I picture him as being in his 20s because he is clearly younger than Job and he is clearly younger than the other three guys. He's been sitting there with his mouth shut the whole time. But now that he sees that Job got the last word in and the three men that were supposed to be trying to convict him of sin have given up, he can't keep his mouth shut any longer. So he burned with anger at Job because he justified himself rather than God. So he also thinks Job is the perpetrator of great sin, and that's why bad things have happened to him. So he's functioning on the exact same faulty philosophy. Bad things only happen to bad people. So Job must be super, super bad. So he's upset that they didn't fix the problem. Verse 4, so now Elihu had waited to speak to Job because they were older than he. When Elihu saw that there was no answer in the mouth of these three men, he burned with anger. And so Elihu, the son of Barakel, the Buzite, answered and said, I'm young in years. You're aged. he's talking to the three guys. Therefore, I was timid and afraid to declare my opinion to you. I said, let days speak, meaning multiple days, years, and many years teach wisdom. But it is the breath of man, the breath of the Almighty, that makes him understand. It is not the old who are wise, nor the aged who understand what is right. And so he's basically saying, apparently, your many years have not provided you with the wisdom of God in this circumstance and situation, because you didn't fix the problem. You didn't make Job repent and confess. Verse 10, therefore I say, listen to me. Let me also declare my opinion. So he jumps in and says, I'll fix it all. I'll make him repent. I'll make him see the wisdom of God. So everything this guy says also has to be filtered through the teaching of Scripture elsewhere, because he's in the wrong. Behold, I waited for your words. I listened for your wise sayings while you searched out what to say. I gave you my attention. And behold, there was none among you who refuted Job or who answered his words. So basically, you failed. I thought you could do it, but you failed. Beware, lest you say, we have found wisdom. God may vanquish him, not a man. So basically he says, don't make this excuse that God will take him down, because you guys should have taken him down. He has not directed his words against me, and I will not answer him with your speeches. So Elihu basically says, he won't get away from me, because I'm not going to deal with him the same way you guys did. I'm going to really rebuke him for his sinful behavior that brought God's judgment.